For members only, Golf Smarter number 260, published on December 7, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Golf is a mind game with John Adler.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast, and now the weather. Most of the U.S. is getting slammed with snow and miserable conditions. I'm so sorry if that's you. But it also means that it's time for you to book yourself for 4 days in the Arizona sun at our Golf Smarter Scottsdale Adventure, February 9th through the 13th, 2011. It's going to be a lot of golf, golf conversation, golf education, and a ton of fun. Check out all the details at golfsmarter.com. Our guest today is John Adler, a performance coach from the UK focused on working with golfers and executives. Our conversation was recorded on Skype, so I apologize if there are any short drops in the call, but I promise you won't miss any of the details of his methods, and the sound quality is so much better than the telephone. Now, what compelled me to bring John on as a guest was his website offers a 12-question survey that will get you thinking about your game in new ways even before you analyze the answers. I'll include the link on our blog and show notes. You know I love this kind of stuff and really believe that you can achieve lower scores much quicker when you golf smarter than by tweaking your swing mechanics during the round. Welcome to Golf Smarter for members only, John.
Hi. Hi, Fred.
Thank you for making time to visit with us from the other side of the pond.
You're welcome.
Now, where exactly are you as we speak on this Skype phone call?
I'm in Bournemouth on the south coast of England, supposedly the sunny south coast, but it's actually raining.
Oh, and as we're recording this, it's the weekend. It's just a day before Ryder Cup begins, and we obviously don't want to spend too much time talking about it because by the time everyone hears this, it would have been long over, and we would have missed the whole thing.
Sure. Well, I'm looking forward to going. I'm going there tomorrow, and I'm going to be there for the weekend. It's in Wales, which is where I'm from. I'm a Welshman. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to observing how anxiety and tension will play a part, which it's bound to play a part, especially on the last day or so.
And how will you measure that? What will you be looking at and for?
Well, I just look at the players, really. I'm not really too... I mean, you can look at the swing, but I just look at the player as he's swinging, as he's making the swing. I've been observing golfers swinging a golf club for the best part of 10 years now. So little things present themselves, and I don't even know if I could tell you what I know or how I know. I just know sometimes when they're anxious and when there's fear in the shot. I mean, the shot might come off fine, but I'll have an idea of whether there's there because, hey, they're only human. Why wouldn't they feel anxiety?
Yeah, exactly, and they're competing on a global stage. This is what they do, right? I mean, that's their job.
Yeah, it's their job, and you'd think they'd get used to it, and sure enough, these guys do get used to it over a period of time. I'm sure if you and I put ourselves in that pressure cooker situation time after time, we'd also get used to it. Whether we could perform to our potential at that level, well, that's why these guys are at the top of their game, because they've found a way to get the best out of themselves even when there's pressure on, and that's what separates them from the rest of the guys on the tour.
And it's got to be a different type of pressure because it's a team game, and that's not how they train themselves.
Sure, I think so. I mean, but ultimately, it's the same type of pressure because there is no pressure out on the golf course. I mean, we could drive around the 2010 course tomorrow, and I'm sure we wouldn't find any pressure out there. It's all self-imposed. The nation is going to bomb, and it's very easy to say that. But in reality, we create our own pressure. So whether it's worried about letting ourselves down or worried about letting a teammate down. Mm-hmm. It's our worry. It's our concern, and we create it. All our misery is self-created, Fred. I'm sure of that.
And that really does come into play on a golf course.
Yeah. Well, we do it all the time. That's part of our nature, I suppose. Not our true nature. I think it's our mind has. It's almost like there's two sides to it, and I guess the question would be: are you your mind, or do you have a mind?
Hmm.
What do you think, Fred?
Are you your mind, or do you have a mind?
Hmm.
How would I?
It's one of those, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. You go around in circles on that one for quite a while.
I mean, to me, to my way of thinking, I have a mind. But someone thinks it's me, and it starts to take over. And when that happens, usually what you call is kind of get in your own way. My mind gets in the way. It starts to become overly concerned with results, overly concerned with how I look. It doesn't want to look bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to duff a shot. I don't want to make a bad shot. And I'm craving success. So this part of the mind, which I call the ego mind, is the bit that gets in the way. And part of my training is helping golfers to understand the difference between that side of their mind, the one that berates you when you do something wrong. You know, you hear these guys on the course saying, "You fool, you damn fool, what did you do that for?" And I say, "Well, who are you talking to?" "Oh, I'm just talking to myself." Almost as if there's two people sort of playing the game.
Right.
And yourself is the bit that plays the shot. Now, yourself can play the shot very nicely when your mind gets out of the way and focuses well. And that's kind of what I do. I coach golfers to concentrate.
Excellent. Well, that would be something that I would like to discuss further with you. Now, on your website, golfisamindgame.com, you have, I found just this to me was a full episode of the podcast, is this survey that you have on the site that is very simple, 12 questions, yes, no, sometimes are the answer, and someone can take the this survey, and I'll put the link to it on our blog and in the show notes so that people can go and do this themselves. You'll take this information and you can analyze what kind, when you get these 12 answers, what can you do with it? And then we'll go into these questions because I think they're all worthy of long discussions.
Well, once you answer the mental strength survey online, I analyze the answers and I reply to you personally. Sometimes I'll reply with some advice if I think it's useful, or a few ideas more than advice, because I'm wary of listening to other people's advice. I don't know about you, but I like to find out for myself what works and what doesn't. So perhaps a few ideas that you could try out. Sometimes I come back with some questions to find out a little bit more about what's going on. But there's an opportunity there for you to have a dialogue with me if you want to, and to explore, you know, what's going on for you.
And what is it that you're trying to help us figure out?
Well, what I'm trying to help you figure out is that maybe the search for the perfect swing could end the moment you began to trust the swing that you've already got.
Mm. I like that.
You like that?
I do. I just think that's something that most people, you know, we had a recent conversation that talked about forget about the perfect swing and focus more on playing the game.
True. That's an alternative way, but a very true way. I mean, playing any game, to me, it presupposes that you're going to have fun and enjoy it.
Mm.
And how often do you go out and play and enjoy golf? I mean, a lot of people don't do that enough.
Right.
And I think they get confused with, they get scared of making mistakes, or they think somehow that making mistakes is wrong. And in reality, anything that you've ever done well, anything that you've ever mastered, you did so by making mistakes and learning from them. And unfortunately in golf, from time to time, people just get so fed up with their own mistakes that they miss the opportunity to enjoy the game.
Right. To enjoy themselves, to enjoy the game, and to have fun.
Absolutely.
And recognize that it is a game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're going to make mistakes. But mistakes are okay. It's part of getting better.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I've often thought that golf is just a series of disasters that you have to deal with, and how is it that you handle that?
I'd agree with you. Yeah, I mean, my work. Excuse me. There's an aeroplane going overhead.
Oh, I can't hear it.
Okay, good. There's a.
As long as it's not getting too close. I mean, then I'll, then we could just say, okay, yeah, fine. We'll put it on pause for a minute here. But
yeah, no, it's not coming.
We can't
it's not
hear
coming
it.
Close.
I can't hear it.
Yeah, no, you know, my work with professional golf was, I work with professionals and amateurs, mm-hmm. but my work with professionals especially revolves around their desire to perform and their emphasis, their overemphasis. They emphasize too much the result aspect of the game. And consequently, this is when they're playing in the tournaments, in tournament mode. And they find that they can play very well away from the course, in friendly games and in practice rounds. But when it comes to the actual day, their ability deserts them. Well, I would say that it's not their ability that deserts them. It's just that their desire to play well or their fear of playing badly unbalances their mind. And the unbalancing of the mind leads to a loss of concentration or focus. And this loss of concentration is the cause for their poor swings and poor golf. But they will usually go round and round in circles looking for problems with or solutions to swing problems until eventually they realize that their game is they can't perform in that environment. And they end up coming to me, and occasionally we get very good results.
And that's golf. Occasionally you get good results.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not always. Some people, I spend one hour with them and I never see them again. And good luck to them. Maybe it's not for them. But if people have an open mind and they're interested and they want to learn how to concentrate and focus their mind, then with patience and practice, they will get very good results. But they have to stay with it.
Now, I'm fascinated by your comment that you said desire to play well or fear of playing badly.
Mm-hmm.
Are they the same thing, just reiterated yeah. differently, or are they very different things?
Two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
You know, craving and aversion, the two things that unbalance the mind. So you're looking for two things. When to play well, you need awareness, that is a concentrated mind, to remain equanimous. When you play with your friends, you can remain equanimous. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose. You're playing for fun. When there's a card in your hand or there's a competition on, your equanimity can go. You can crave success, or you can be fearful of looking bad. And it's the equanimity that is lost causes the focus and concentration to go, and consequently you don't play to your potential.
Interesting. Well, let's go to the survey now, and let's start with question number one. Do you find that, I'm just curious on what generally the results that you get, if you have statistics on how many people have filled out your surveys and what the answers are. But the first question is, do you pretty much know how you are going to play even before you hit a shot?
Well, I have a lot of people take the survey. I haven't got any numbers, actually. But a lot of people do take the survey. And you'd be surprised at how often people come back and say, yes, I do know how I'm going to play before I've hit a shot. And my reply is usually, well, can you tell me what the lotto numbers are going to be for this week? Because it's preposterous. You can't honestly know how you're going to play before you've hit a shot because you haven't played yet.
Oh, see, now I read that to say, do you have an intention for what you're trying to accomplish?
Not really.
Yeah, I was as I'm standing behind the ball and I'm looking down the fairway, do I have a sense in my mind what I want, where I want to put the ball, where I want to position it for my next shot? Do I have that? Where I've seen a lot of players who just go and hit the ball as hard as they possibly can every single time. And hope for the best. There are others, and I hope I'm in this category, that has an intention of, you know, some strategy, I guess may be the word, of what I want to accomplish there. So I didn't read it in that sense of, do I know what the results are going to be?
Yeah, that's interesting, actually, the way that you read it and where you viewed it just shows you how different we all are. Everyone gets a different something different from different things. But yeah, the way I was thinking was, you know, I often get people coming up to me, or even if I'm about to play golf myself, and I say, "Hey, how you doing?" You know, and they say, "Yeah, I'm hitting the ball great. I'm really going to play well today." And I think, "Oh, really? You know already that you're going to play well?" And someone will say, "You know, oh, I'm playing terribly. I'm not looking forward to it. I know I'm going to play badly." And I exactly the same. How do you know that you're going to play badly?
Right. And those are generally the days. Those are generally the days that flip flop. When you're walking with a lot of confidence, it's like that's the kiss of death in golf, right?
There you go. So go figure that one out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you think when your expectations are low, then you perform better. There's less craving.
Yes.
There's less aversion, less fear, less worry. You're not expecting anything, so you go out and play very well. When you're playing well and your expectations are high, well, it's very easy to fall off and have come down with a bump. I'm quite interested in meditation and Eastern philosophy, and the Zen masters, I think, used to say, keep your bed very low to the ground. And I quite like that. I always think of that. Keep your bed very low to the ground. That way, if you fall off, you haven't got very far to fall. So if you're playing really well, don't worry too much about it. And if you're playing really poorly, don't worry too much about that either. Just keep your bed low.
Mm. So, okay, so now we're even looking at these questions differently. I find that
maybe
really interesting. So, I would read the way you're stating the question now. It's like, do you have a sense how you're going to play before you hit a shot? So you're asking more about, do you think you know what the results are going to be?
Yeah, that was my idea. But it's easily lost in translation, obviously,
because
with one line in written form can be very different to if we're having a chat about it, and then we can establish what exactly I mean. But a lot of people haven't got a clue what I talk about anyway, Fred, so you're not alone.
then what are we doing here? I want to move on to question number two then, and do you prepare well for a round? I could see that having a wide range of, you know, depending on what your confidence level is, of what your answer could be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess all of these questions are very subjective. You know, how do you prepare well for a round? I know some guys, their idea of preparation for a round is to go out the night before, have a few beers, sleep well, turn up on the first tee and tee it up.
Hmm. Yeah.
That, maybe that works for them.
Yeah.
Other people.
And for me, it's like I need to get up, you know, I need to get up real early. I need to stretch for a long time, do some exercise, have a nice breakfast, you know. And then I need to get out to the driving range and hit a bucket of balls, small bucket of balls first, but just get a sense of what that feels like. Make sure I go to the putting green. If I have enough time, see if I can practice a couple of short shots. I mean, to me, that versus just showing up and hitting the, you know, the first tee as soon as I get there are two completely different things. So,
yeah, well, sure. I mean, whatever's right for you is right. But also, I'd encourage anybody who does it one way to have an open mind and try it another way and give it a period of time. Maybe take some results over five rounds. So do five rounds doing it your way, where you prepare well and you go through all your routine. And do another five rounds where you do it the other way, and just see, because I think very often we can build ourselves up into such a tizzy that, you know, and unless everything's in its place, then we feel that we're not ready and we can't go out and play. I'm not sure that is the case. It may, if you have an open mind, I know for sure that you can go out and play quite well with no practice. That's my experience anyway, but you'd have to find out for yourself. But give it a go, just for the hell of it. It's possible.
Yeah. No, I know that I have shown up to just with enough time just to tee off and have had good rounds.
So it's possible.
It's absolutely possible. But you just never know what's going to happen on the golf course on any given day. I think that's why competitions are generally 4 days long, because, you know, you're going to get a wide range on every single day, no matter how you prepare or what's going on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You never know. What, you know, nothing. I've got a favorite saying that, what does that mean? It means nothing. Nothing means nothing. Just because I played really well yesterday, what does that mean for today? Nothing.
Right.
I played really bad yesterday. What does
Yeah, exactly. It means nothing. And it's, you know, when people stand up at a tee box and go, I always hit it in the water here, I generally respond with, so what does that have to do with the shot? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's like there's no way that's going to have any impact on what your next shot is unless, you know, if it's that bad, why are you hitting the same club you always do if you change it, right?
Yeah, of course. Change it, do something different, and also question the always what you've never ever not gone in the water.
Yeah.
Oh well, maybe, you know. So yeah, right. Well, I mean, we're all deluding ourselves all the time. I know that.
Right.
So some more than others.
Well, it kind of lends itself to go to question three, which is: do you have more than one swing thought? And wow, I gotta believe that a lot of people. So again, you don't keep statistics on what these answers are and what the.
No, it might be something that that be worth doing, but no, I don't. I mean, everyone's individual.
Aren't you a scientist? Aren't you? Whenever you have a survey, I got to believe that you're like, you know, collecting data.
Not really, Fred. I'm just trying to build up a conversation with people if they want to, and to explore, because there's only so much I can get from these questions. You know, I mean, their answers, a yes, no, or sometimes is only going to give me so much. You're never going to really find out what's going on in people's minds until you sit down, have a cup of tea, and have a chat with them over a little period of time. So,
right.
But maybe statistics is the way forward. I'm obviously not big on statistics, but it's not. Maybe it's something I should look at.
Okay. I guess it's a golf thing. Numbers, stats, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Greens,
yeah,
and regulation.
I'm not big on that
number
either.
Of putts.
It's not how I roll, Fred.
You know, and I'm generally, you know, not a numbers guy either. I'm going out there to have a good time. But the longer I get involved in doing these interviews, I'm realizing there's a whole world of golfers and golf out there that I didn't have a clue. But I was not raised on golf. I mean, I find that people who, you know, started playing when they were little because their dad took them out, it's a completely different game for them than.
Oh, yeah. I mean, are you one of these guys who they come off the golf course and then they're in the clubhouse and they say, what did you get on the fifth? How did you get on the sixth? I mean, when they do that to me, my eyes just glaze over. I haven't got a clue. I don't even know what that hole looks like or what I did.
Oh, thank you. I have a course that I've played, a lot over the last 10 years. I mean, I play, and even to this day, when they go, how'd you do on 13? I'm like, 13. Let's see, 10, 11, 12. You know, it's like having to do the alphabet, and it's like, when someone says, what letter follows this? It's like, I have to do the whole alphabet.
That's me, too.
Yeah. I it's what amazes me about not just broadcasters, but also the players, that they'll tell you what, you know, they did not only on a specific hole, but on a specific shot for a specific hole, and they just, boom, just rattle it right off. It's like, no, I can't do that.
And they'll go, oh, yeah, the 13th's great there. I remember I hit a 4-iron. And you go, how do you remember this stuff?
Right. It was memorable. Like, I mean.
Sure.
Like, you know, I have one eagle on a par 5 in my playing career. I remember those three shots.
Yeah.
And the hole. And, you know, even the putt. I mean, and the hole in one that I have. And the eagle on a par 4. I have one of each of those.
Yeah, those things are going to stick in your mind.
Sure. But generally, I played this weekend and I had a good round of golf, but I don't remember what happened on a lot of the holes. I also find that if I'm in a cart versus walking, that I'll remember a course that I walked much more than a course that I was in a you know, in a buggy. It's like, you know, to me, when you're driving a cart, you hit the ball, you drive to the ball, you hit the ball, you drive to the ball, and you miss all the environment and everything else that's going on around you. And to me, I lose, I don't get to remember the holes. They're not as memorable when I'm not walking them.
I totally agree with you. I'm not a big fan of buggies. Wherever I can avoid them, I do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the course that I played this weekend, like, no, sorry, you can't walk this course. Really? It's flat. Yeah. Well, it's also 104 degrees outside.
Yeah, in that kind of heat. I remember I played Palm Springs a few years back when I came over, and we had buggies, and I was probably glad for them, really. But I just got back from Scotland about three weeks ago, and we played Carnoustie up there.
How was that?
no need for buggies. Well, it was a competition, and on the first day I shot a net 72, and I was in the top 20 and looking pretty good. Day two, well, Carnoustie's got a nickname of the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the Beast just came out to play. There was 50-mile-an-hour wind.
Oh, my God. 50-mile-an-hour
wind? I shot a gale. I mean, honestly, the pros wouldn't have gone out. And I shot a net 101. And I felt really bad, Fred. But when I went into the clubhouse in the hotel, I was staying in the hotel, and there's some pictures, photographs in the hallway, and there was a photograph of Sergio Garcia with his head down marching around Carnoustie, and one of those guys is holding up the scoreboard, you know, like they do.
Right.
And there were three names on there, and there was Vijay Singh plus 13, Rocco Mediate was plus 17, and Garcia was plus 30. And apparently, and you just see the picture of him trudging off. And apparently after that round at Carnoustie, he went home and cried in his mother's arms.
Oh.
So it made me feel a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then that takes it to question six. Does your mind wander to the score a lot during your round? you know, and so just the idea of, or even number eight there, does your mood change a lot during a round? And now on a round like that, when the winds are just beating you down and you're not enjoying yourself, I mean, does that happen? Well, you know, when it's that difficult and you're playing in winds like that, there's got to be moments that you're going, why am I here today? Why am I doing this?
Yeah, for sure. From my own experience, you have to be interested enough to want to be there in order to play to your potential. And you have to be enjoying what you do in order to play to your potential, I think. Now, in some conditions, when you'd rather not be there, I think it's going to be very difficult for you to play to your potential. So what the question before that was, what did you say?
Does your mind wander to the score?
Does your mind wander to the score?
A lot during your
round. We've all been in a position where you're doing quite nicely. Maybe on the front nine, you've had a really good front nine. You think maybe I could beat my score, you know, my best score around this course. And then your mind, as soon as you've had that thought, you're on a slippery slope.
Yep.
Only if you don't realize that it's nonsense and that the round's not over. You could shoot your highest score yet, or maybe it's possible to shoot your lowest score. But when those thoughts begin to come in, if you start reacting to those thoughts and start getting tense and start worrying about where the ball's going to go, then it's bye-bye, I'm afraid.
That's
the end for you.
I think that I've, I guess this is a training, I've learned to train myself on this, but I you know, add up the score after nine and just, okay, that's what I did. If my mind wanders to a score during a round, it's generally at the worst time, which is the 17th hole.
Okay.
Terrible time to do it. Oh, if I only get a par on this next hole, triple bogey.
Yeah. Well, you must understand now that your craving has started.
Mm-hmm.
You've begun to crave a result. It hasn't happened yet, so your mind is becoming unbalanced. The minute you have that thought, there's a little craving going on, and there may be some aversion, some fear about messing up too. Therefore, you will be losing the calmness and the balance of your mind. If you can become more aware of that more quickly, before you play your next shots, you can center yourself and realize that, in all honesty, nothing's finished yet. You could still do well, or you might mess it up. That's reality. And if you can deal with reality and say, you know what, I'm going to swing and I'm going to enjoy this swing and I'll take wherever it goes, then you've got a chance.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, very much so. So if listeners of the Golf Smarter podcast want to go ahead and take your free survey, again, it's 12 questions. You're saying it's more to, I found it as a way of thinking on my own. It's like, well, these are really interesting questions. Do I need to consider to put that into my game, into my routine of these things, or even consider these things while I'm playing? But you're saying it's just more of a way to create a dialogue with you to help you on your mental game.
Yes, for example, I mean, if you're thinking about too many swing thoughts, that could be a problem. For some people, it's not. For some people, like two or three swing thoughts, I would be wary of thinking of trying to concentrate on more than one thing at a time. I mean, we probably all tried to do two or three different things at once, and probably the quality of all the things that you're doing suffers, as opposed to when you're dedicated to one thing and focusing on one thing, then you put in that thing. So they've all got little things behind them, but you know, whatever helps. If it's useful for people to look at them and think of one thing for the round, one question, and observe that for the round, then do that. If they want to get in contact and discuss how they might be able to improve their performance, then I'm happy to help. I'm here to help, Fred.
And what is it that you explain to people that when you meet somebody new and you explain what it is that you do and what your goal is? How would you explain that?
Well, I'm a performance coach. My aim is purely to improve people's performance. I coach golfers predominantly. I also coach business people. But ultimately, I'm judged by results, and I'm happy for that to be the case. But I do it in an alternative way. It's not. I'm not a big believer in positive thinking. All that sort of stuff doesn't really work for me. I tried it myself. And what I do is I show people exercises practically on the golf course, on practice ground, and so they can experience for themselves what focusing is, what concentration is, and what interferes with it. And that way, from their own experience, they can learn, as opposed to believing me. I wouldn't believe a word I say, Fred. But you can find out for yourself, and I can show you how to find out for yourself.
Excellent. And again, the website is golfisamindgame.com, and I will put a link to it in the show notes and in our blog. So if you want to go check it out, please go do so yourself. And start the conversation with John Adler. He's a performance coach. He's based in the UK, so he may be close to you. It may not. It doesn't matter. It's the internet. John, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate you coming on Golf Smarter today.
It's been a pleasure, Fred.
Hey, there's only 1 week left for you to cast your vote for Golf Smarter as your favorite sports podcast. Actually, it's the only golf podcast that has made the finals in the People's Choice Podcast Awards for 2010. I would appreciate your vote daily through December 15th at podcastawards.com. I'll make sure to post the link on our blog, and Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. I've been trying to do that on a daily basis, but it's not always that easy, and some people are like, enough! Stop! I voted! No, I need for you to vote daily. Actually, Michael from Canada, a Golf Smarter member, after casting his vote, wrote and asked me, so, Fred, if you win, what do you get? A pat on the back? Really nothing. But also, being the top golf podcast is a great way for me to gain attention of future guests and sponsors. So any help you can provide is greatly appreciated. I just want you to let you know that next week's show will be available this weekend because I'm off to Cancun, Mexico to see if I can get kidnapped. And get videotape of it. No, not really. I'm going to Cancun to check out some golf courses there for a potential Golf Smarter adventure. I'm going to get some video for upcoming Golf Smarter TV and, of course, see what I can do to bring in some more Golf Smarter podcast episodes. Next week, we actually begin our sixth year of shows, and we'll have the return of Jeff Ritter. Now, Jeff's going to join us at one of our group dinners during our Scottsdale adventure in February. This way, you can ask and get follow-up answers to your questions face-to-face with Jeff, who's an awesome guy. So he'll be on again next week. Again, put it in your calendar, February 9th through the 13th. If you have any questions or issues or concerns, please let me have the opportunity to customize the weekend for you. Just write me and let me know, or call me toll-free at 415-448-6788. If you try to contact me between the 11th through the 20th, I will be unavailable, but I will be checking my email daily, at least my Gmail account. So, you know, I'll get back to you soon. We'll get this taken care of. So we end this week with six words on the Golf Smarter Scottsdale adventure. Deadline is January 7. Join us! If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred, Hola Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.